This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Wednesday to you. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. So I guess the Atlanta Braves have gotten that road split. They win game one last night, 6-2. They had a 5-0 lead after three innings and didn't really look back. Jorge Soler got things started with a first inning, first pitch, first home run of the game. Then afterwards, Charlie Morton left the game with a fractured fibula. So we'll get to the game one news and notes coming up in the show as well. We're also going to talk to Larry Lage of the Associated Press in hour number one. We don't normally have a guest in hour one, but he agreed to wake up early with us. He's going to talk about the Michigan-Michigan State game coming up. He's from the Associated Press out there in Michigan. Big game because, again, both of these teams undefeated and a chance on the big 10 title game appearance could be on the line between the Wolverines and the Spartans. We'll also get a little bit more serious because Roger Goodell came out and talked about the investigation into the Washington football team. You know, the one that led to John Gruden's demise. Well, no more information is going to be released because there are certain people that want to stay anonymous in the process. Remember, there are 650,000 emails that were being looked at. And the only thing that we're going to get publicly is that John Gruden should no longer be a head coach in the NFL. That's it? Man, this was a big story about a year or so ago. And we're not going to get anything out of this thing? I think there's a little bit more to this. Roger Goodell works for the owners, and apparently he's doing a very, very good job. But we're going to get into the World Series game one last night. The Braves continue. And this is the one fascinating thing about this team. All season long, anybody that has had any value to the organization seems to have suffered some sort of injury, some sort of problem, some sort of issue that has prevented them from contributing. They lose Charlie Morton in the third inning, and yet they still go on to win this game, and rather comfortably too, as the bullpen did a magnificent job. What else could happen to this Braves team who need just three more wins for the championship? We'll go over game one. We'll also talk to you again about Michigan and Michigan State as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's, as we continue this morning. I got a little bit of a head cold, so please excuse my voice if it gets a little raspy this morning. I knew this was happening, too. The weather is starting to change. It's like 85 degrees over the weekend, and now it's cold and wet rain. Like, we opened up all the windows because it was like, oh, it's fall. We opened up all the windows. We started to be freezing. It's like, I'll close these things. But it's kind of wet and dreary. So please, again, forgive me if my voice even cracks this morning. But anyway, the Braves and the Astros last night, 6-2 win by Atlanta in game one. And again, they get the road win they need. But also, Charlie Morton is now lost for the season. Here's a fascinating thing about Morton. He got hurt in the second inning of this game on a comebacker and then left the game in the third inning. He had pitched a good number of pitches on what was a fractured fibula.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Men are just built differently, Tony.
I know. Not me. I would have just, after the comebacker, if I was on the mat, I would have just assumed I had broken a fibula and just went, I'm done. Thanks. Bye. But I mean,
he was pushing off of it for like the rest of that inning.
And then
spilt it over a little bit in the third inning. That's amazing to me.
It is amazing. So just to give you a little background, he got hit in the second, and then after the inning was over, they did have an X-ray that was negative, but he did throw in the tunnel. He said he really had a hard time walking, but he could pitch. But then in the third inning, that was it. He just put too much stress on it. That was it. But he's one of their best pitchers, not their best pitcher, and now he's done. When you add up what the Braves have, what has happened to them this season, right? Ronald Acuna Jr., Marcelo Zuna had a problem with the domestic violence issue. Mike Soroka has been out. They have suffered tons and tons of injuries at various spots during the season, and yet they keep winning games. It is amazing how they keep doing this. Now, I do think this Morton loss is gonna come back to bite them a bit, because we're not, you know, look, this is a good one-win game. I think the Astros are still going to end up winning this series. I think this was a bad night for Framber Valdez, who gave up the early home run, didn't last at all. The both teams, you know, left a few runners on base. I mean, the Astros left bases loaded. What was that, in the second inning of this game last night? Or I think it was the first inning. So, nevertheless, it ends up being a Braves win. They got on the board early. They had a 5-0 lead. Astros can definitely play catch-up. Their lineup is that loaded, but they just could not get anything against the Atlanta Braves bullpen. A.J. Minter picked up the win in relief. Luke Jackson was fantastic. Will Smith picked up the ninth inning call. So game last night went to Atlanta, but I think the Astros are still too potent, and we'll get Max Fried tonight. We'll get Ian Anderson for the Braves in game two. Jose Aquiti will go in game two tonight for Houston. But I do think this is a big deal for the Braves. The last Braves win in the World Series came in game two of the 1996 World Series. So it's big. And I didn't realize this, that Jorge Soler became the first player in Major League Baseball history to hit a leadoff home run in game one of the World Series. I got to think at some point that had happened before, given all the World Series games that have been played, all of the, you know, all the years. I can't believe that never happened before at any point.
I mean, Ricky Henderson went to a few World Series, right? I mean, he was notorious for that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was 100% with you on that one. I mean, of all the World Series games, well, we've had World Series since like the 1900s.
Yeah, exactly.
There's never been a leadoff home run.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. And kudos again to the people who figured this stuff out. That there's never been a leadoff home run in a World Series game ever in the history of the World Series. You know, I don't know how they do this, to be honest with you. I don't know how they come up with that quickly. I mean, in the preparations for these games, is that what they look for? They say, oh, by the way, Jorge Soler, and he's going to be leading off the game. So remember, everybody, no one has ever hit a leadoff home run in the World Series in game one. So just to be, you know, in case it happens, be ready to say it's the first time ever. I know there's a team of people that just pour through this kind of stuff, but man. But again, I was impressed. Atlanta, this again, they had two home runs in this game, so it's not like it hit seven or eight. I mean, they're not going to do that. But they got to Framber Valdez, and that's the key, right? If you're going to make this a bullpen game, make it a bullpen game. And Valdez lasted just two innings, giving up those five runs. He was so magnificent in game five against the Red Sox. And I think this was a key start for Houston. But I don't think that the Astros bats are going to be as quiet down the road in this World Series as they kind of were last night in situations. I mean, they were 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. 1-for-9. They left 9 men on base. The Astros are great at scoring runs. Great at moving runners and you know, getting runners in. That is an outlier to what they are. And I think you're going to see them come back in game two. But if the Braves do win tonight, I've seen the Braves up 2-0 before, 96 in particular, you know, but, and I saw the Red Sox take an early 2-0 lead in the 86 World Series against the Mets. So you can come back down 0-2, especially if you lose the first two games at home. The Yankees had to do it. The Yankees had to go to Atlanta and win three straight there to win game six back in New York in 86. And the Mets, of course, lost the first two games at home at Shea Stadium, had to go to Boston and win a few games before they won it in seven. So it's not going to be done for the Astros because I think their lineup is still very good. And when it's on, it's on. And that's one thing about Houston that I do like. It feels like at times when they get hot, it's infectious. It trickles down the lineup. And I think they're going to need that kind of game where Jose Altuve gets on and Brantley drives him home and Yordan Alvarez drives him home and then Carlos Correa hits a home run and then Kyle Tucker gets like that thing where they just keep pouring it on. And I think you're going to see it. But this is going to be a World Series. I'm telling you right now, and you're already starting to hear it about Game 4 with the bullpen game. This is going to be about the pitchers coming out of the pen. I think this is going to be the definition of this series. I think you have a few instances where you can have a pitcher go seven innings or six innings really strong, but I think this is going to be about the bullpen. And I think you saw it last night when Minter came in and Jackson came in and really held the Astros back. And I mean, the Braves struck out 11 and the Astros struck out 12. I mean, these are good. You didn't have one guy blow up. I mean, the only guy who blew up in this game was Framber Valdez. Everybody else did their job. I mean, even the Astros bullpen did their job. I mean, that didn't get out of hand. That was a 5-0 lead after Valdez left the game, and the bullpen did a fantastic job. It only allowed one more run. That was a sack fly to Freddie Freeman, and that was it. And the Braves bullpen was magnificent, absolutely magnificent. And I think that's going to be what's going to define this series. And I think the problem with that, and we talk about it a lot with baseball, you keep bringing out people, one guy is going to not do the job. One guy, I mean, it's almost inevitable that one pitcher is going to be like, whoops, my bad, man. But I think Dusty Baker and Brian Snitker are good at really keeping that to a minimum, right? They got plenty of guys that can go. So if you go out there and it looks like you're shaky, you ain't gonna last. You're not gonna last to give up three runs in your outing out of the pen. So I think what you'll see that in game two. All right, coming up next, I want to get more into this NFL investigation into the Washington football team. Because I think you should all be furious. I really do. I think you should all be furious at this league for what it's doing. Because I believe, and a lot of other people believe, that Roger Goodell and this league are hiding something big. That's coming up next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, and you can also hit Ron up at Ron Culver. And again, that's Ron with two N's. I say it every time because you got to spell Ron with two N's. That's the way he likes it. I know. It's but that's the way his Twitter is set up. Larry Lage is going to join us from the Associated Press, Michigan and Michigan State. That's coming up in this hour. O'Reilly Auto Parts specializes in keeping your car on the road. Not sure how much life is left in your battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts can help. Their professional parts people would test that battery for free. And if it does need to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right one to fit your car. Superstart batteries are built to handle even the toughest conditions. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every single day. All right, I think this Roger Goodell, we want to keep this private because we have anonymous people that we want to protect, is absolute crap. Absolute crap. And I think fans should be livid at this. This is a league that's protecting something. I don't know what it is, but they're protecting something. Because I can't imagine that in this day and age that you can't release a report on your findings without putting the people's names in who want to be anonymous. Is it all or nothing? We can't get a report of what exactly the investigation showed without the names of the people that want to be anonymous for coming forward and speaking on this or talking about this or had emails on this. There's no way to do this at all. Well, according to Roger Goodell, there isn't. Here's Goodell claiming that emails aren't being made public because cheerleaders interviewed in the investigations don't want them to be.
Well, I think that's exactly what we engaged Beth Wilkerson to do as an independent counsel. She met with, as I said, nearly 150 or more than 150 people, went through all those documents. All those individuals had an opportunity to speak to her if they wished. Some did not want to be public. Some wanted to. They're welcome to be public if they wish to. But we want to make sure we're protecting the people who came forward, who had to relive those experiences, because we wanted to make sure we understood what it was, with the objective of making sure that we had the best possible workforce and workplace policies, procedures, people surrounded in those organizations, and the highest standards that respect others and make sure that we have a safe environment for all of our employees.
I got to tell you, that sounds like spin. That sounds so spinny.
I mean, it literally sounds like a publicist wrote this and go, hey, read this.
I'm not kidding. What they're doing is they are hoping, he is hoping that most of you either don't care about this or are too busy to really understand what exactly he's saying. So that when he says, we just want to protect the people who are just coming forward, we want to make sure that they are protected. And you go, oh, they're protecting those people. Good, good for them. And move on to your life. Not knowing that there's probably some real, real damning stuff to Dan Snyder and the people within that organization.
Or to other owners.
Or I mean, other owners.
Listen, I mean, this is all centered around Washington, but it took down the Vegas Raiders head coach.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, anyone is fair game.
And let's make something very clear here. As I said earlier, this guy works for the owners. That's it. That's his job. I mean, he's a commissioner, and he comes down, and he makes decisions, and you know he's the power broker of this league, but he makes decisions on the behest of the ownership group. When he has to punish a team like he did with the Patriots during the Deflategate scandal, right? It is because the other owners allow him to do that, right? This investigation in July of 2020, was broken by the Washington Post that there was something rotten in the Washington football organization. That there were some people that came out, some women that came out, and said this is a massively toxic work environment. There is sexual harassment. There's some really bad stuff going on here. And it was a big bombshell of a story in the summer of 2020. So they did this investigation. Now, they had absolutely no trouble allowing John Gruden's emails to be leaked. For whatever reason, John Gruden became the sacrificial lamb on this. Now, you can argue whether or not his emails warranted the firing, but make no mistake, it was released per the NFL. They are totally okay with this. They were totally fine with this, that John Gruden was taken to the woodshed for this. But anybody else in the 650,000 emails that were being investigated, anybody else, now you won't know about it. Because we want to protect the anonymity of the people who came forward. You can do both. Okay, you know, it's not a one or the other. You can do both. You can say, this is what's going on here. But I think you're right. I think there's more than one owner that is going to look really, really bad in this. And I think that there's a lot of speculation that Dan Snyder is going to look so bad in this that there'll be so much pressure by the public to get rid of him. That there'll be so much pressure on the league and the other league owners to force him out a la Donald Sterling. Now, remember, when Donald Sterling's situation happened, remember, at the time, Adam Silver was the commissioner of the NBA. He also was okay with owners making sure that they were taking him out. That Donald Sterling wasn't very popular. And it was okay from the other owners to say yes. I remember the only person that really kind of threw a ruckus was Mark Cuban, who said, oh, I just want to be careful here. Because this is something we own. This is our property. We own these teams. And I just don't want it taken away. Just like, where's the slippery slope? He agreed that Sterling's conduct was reprehensible, but he was worried about, well, like, how could this play out in the future for me as the owner of the Dallas Mavericks? And I think that that's a situation that's going to go here. I think that there is so much information that they absolutely have no business and no interest whatsoever delivering to the public. Because I think that they would be, oh, we're going to hear it. We're going to hear it. There's going to be so much media pressure and fan pressure to do something, and we don't want to do anything. Here's Roger Goodell again denying that the league is covering up something.
I think if the public understands what we did release, including the documents and the recommendations that Beth made, all 10 of her recommendations were implemented. That was released. We summarized all of the findings that were very open about the things that were happening in that organization that we do not think meet NFL standards and should not be part of a workplace in the NFL. So I think we've been very open about that. I understand the media would like more transparency. I understand they would like more emails. But I think from my standpoint, we've been very firm about the importance of making sure that we got all the information. We made it clear that there was not a workplace environment that we feel is appropriate. So I think we achieved that. And I believe that the changes that are being made to that organization are consistent with Beth's thought were necessary to make sure we did do that.
You know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like if you, it's like when the health department goes into a restaurant and they find 80 violations and like everything from food is on the floor to a refrigerator that's not cool to stoves that don't work properly to warm temperatures and things that are supposed to be cold.
Cockroach in the pantry.
Cockroaches everywhere and insects all over the place. And then that restaurant gets the report and goes, oh, my God, this is so bad. We can't let the public know that. But then they go, well, the health department said, you know, that we need to wash the tables a little bit more. And we've done those kind of things. And, you know, we've made sure that our menus are sanitized a little bit more. And we've made sure we vacuum the floor a little bit better. And we're getting with a carpet cleaning company to come in a little bit more frequently to make sure our carpets are well well cleansed all the way through, but they don't tell you about the cockroaches. They don't tell you about the botulism that's growing in the kitchen, and they don't tell you about the mold on the cheese that they're chopping off, and they don't tell you about the walk-in cooler that's at 72 degrees and the freezer that's not cold, right? They tell you just enough for you to go, oh, looks like they're doing a good job fixing some of the things that are wrong with that place. But they don't give you the full story. So what he was saying was, yeah, look at what we did release. We went through some of their recommendations. We're going to implement some changes. But the media and NFL fans are like, wait. A coach had misogynistic and racist comments in email to another guy within that organization. He lost his job, and 650 emails to that organization, he's the only one?
That's the problem, right? I mean, was it just Gruden? Did Gruden and Bruce Allen exchanged 650,000 emails with each other, and that's it?
That's it? That's the only one? Like, who else is in this? Because I'm telling you right now, and I'm not accusing anybody here. I don't want to. But there are certain owners in this league that if they knew, oh, shoot, I did send an email to Bruce Allen 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, that I really hope. All you have to do is make a phone call to Roger Goodell. That ain't happening. Yeah, I had a conversation with so-and-so within that organization about this player or that coach or this player. And you know what? It wasn't exactly something I'd like the public to know. So Goodell is doing a masterful job, which is what he always does, in saying, hey, look over here. Look what we're doing. It's great. It's fantastic. You'll love it. Well, look at what we're doing. We're changing things. Meanwhile, on the other side of it is everything they absolutely are praying to God don't get released. Because there might be five owners involved. There might be two. There might be 10. Who knows? That all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. Really?
No, I think it's a real problem. And like you said, I'm hoping there's still enough public pressure to keep on top of it.
I do, too.
You know, I mean, for one, just sheer curiosity. You know, it's like the little gossip girl in all of us is like, oh, I want to know what happened, what was said. But also, I mean, you know, it in this day and age, I mean, this is something that, you know, probably has gone on for years and years and years. But now we're in the information age where it's like, you know, we kind of demand more. We kind of expect more. And it's not going to sit well with us that it's just Gruden. If Gruden's the only person to be taken down from all those emails, that's it. Nah, it's not going to sit well at all.
No, it's not going to sit well. And think about this for a second. You know, Gruden, you can argue Gruden doesn't deserve to be a coach. I get it. I would understand it. But 10 years ago as an analyst on Monday Night Football, and he can't work, but nothing else? In the end, this entire investigation and the only information is Gruden's fired? Ridiculous.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Huge game coming up this week in Michigan and Michigan State. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Larry Lage joins us, Associated Press, to preview the Wolverines and the Spartans. Michigan 7-0. They're ranked 6th in the AP poll. Michigan State 7-0 as well. They are ranked 8th. How are you, Larry?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Let's talk about Michigan first. What is this team a lot different, somewhat different than other teams Jim Harbaugh has had?
Definitely different than John's because they're not an NFL team, but right. It is early. I went to Michigan's press conference yesterday. Aiden Hutchinson was there and a few other players, and I mistakenly called Kenneth Walker Kareem Walker, who is kind of a obscure former Michigan running back. So it happened. So
sure.
This is a different team to some extent, but the jury is still out. And we're going to know a lot more about both teams, but specifically Michigan on Saturday. There's no doubt that Michigan can run the ball better than Harbaugh's previous teams. The defense appears to be improved, but the verdict will be rendered on Jim Harbaugh's 7th team at Michigan over the next month, because you've got number 8, Michigan State, on the road. Also Penn State, which is not as good of a team as we thought maybe a few weeks ago. And then, of course, the regular season finale against the Buckeyes, who look really good since losing to Oregon. And Harbaugh has not beaten Ohio State as a coach. So I think they're different, but we'll know a lot more Saturday and over the next month how different this team is, because he's done this before, where got off to a hot start and then finished 10-3. I hate to say we'll see in late October, but we'll see.
I do want to stay on Harbaugh for a second, because one of the things I like about having guys, especially local guys who are really in sort of the belly of the beast, is that some stories seem bigger nationally than they are locally, and vice versa. Maybe a story is bigger locally than it is nationally. But over the last few years, there has always been this sort of conversation about Harbaugh in Michigan. He's on a hot seat, even though he's an alum. How real was that over the last couple of years?
I think it was real, and I think you can point to his contract, which is essentially a year-to-year contract that gives the school a relatively inexpensive out if they decide to move on. And Jim Harbaugh as well, although I think we saw in the last offseason that the NFL teams were not knocking on Jim Harbaugh's door to get back to the league. So I think it was pretty real, because you look at his contract, he took a pay cut and guaranteed money of about half, and essentially he's working on a year-to-year deal. I will say his boss is his former teammate, Ward Manuel, who is going to give Jim Harbaugh the benefit of the doubt and as much leeway as he can. But this is year 7. So going into year 7, Jim Harbaugh's new deal is essentially a year-to-year contract. And I will say Ward Manuel appears to be very happy, as does everyone who is pulling for the maize and blue. But I think a lot of people are still wondering how is this season going to shake out. It certainly looks good now. And yet, if you look at who Michigan has beaten and also Michigan State, you won't find a ranked team. And I think Wisconsin's the only one with a winning record.
Yeah, I wanted to lean into that a bit. Obviously, Wisconsin has not been Wisconsin, but is there any game on the schedule that really showcased the real strengths of either one of these teams so far this season?
Well, I think the most impressive win either team has had is Nebraska. And if you look at Nebraska's record, you're like, they're not good. But, you know, the cliche, that's the best 2-5 team around. I don't even know what Nebraska's record is off the top of my head, but they're pretty gritty, gutty team. Obviously, the results aren't there. They're not finishing, but, you know, Washington was supposed to be good. That was supposed to be a prime time game, an opportunity for Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines early in the season. Washington is not good. Michigan State won at Miami, a team that was supposed to be good. Miami is not good. So it's not like, you know, they were playing Sisters of the Poor and then they got an easy break in the Big Ten schedule. Just teams that were supposed to be really good haven't been. So as Mel Tucker says, the schedule is the schedule. It's not like they can do much about that. But for both of these teams, we're going to know a lot more the next month because they play each other, they play Penn State, and they play Ohio State.
You mentioned Michigan being able to run the football. How is Michigan State good? Their pass rush is pretty good. What is the dynamic of Michigan State's defense?
Well, Michigan State's defense has kind of been bend, don't break. Keep it in front of you. Don't give up the big play. And by and large, that has worked. Michigan State also has a great running game. Kenneth Walker, we're going to see three of the best running backs in the country, at least on paper, in this game. Kenneth Walker for Michigan State, a Wake Forest transfer, one of about 20 transfers on Mel Tucker's team, which has really sparked a turnaround. And then for Michigan, you've got Blake Corum, who can stop on a dime and give you 9 cents change, and Hassan Haskins, who will just run over you. So they've got a really nice 1-2 combination. Both these teams are going to want to run. Both these teams are going to try to stop the run and force the opposing quarterback to make plays down the field, and we've seen that at times with Peyton Thorne. We have not seen it with Cade McNamara, and the buzz in Ann Arbor is, you know, when is J.J. McCarthy, a highly touted freshman with a great arm, when is he going to get more run? He's gotten some spot duties, some plays here and there. It's going to be very interesting to see how much more, if he plays more, J.J. McCarthy gets, you know, what kind of run he gets against Michigan State on Saturday. I kind of see Michigan State forcing McNamara to throw deep, and I don't think he's going to be able to do it. I see J.J. McCarthy coming in. We'll see how the freshman does on Fox's big noon kickoff game on noon Eastern Saturday. And Saturday can't get quick enough for me. Is it Wednesday? I got Lions today, too, but the winless Lions. We'll talk about them another time, but
we
I can't wait for Saturday.
We love the winless Lions, by the way. On this show, we are big fans of Dan Campbell, so we'll be more than happy to get you back to talk some Lions down the road, my friend. Larry Lynch joins us in the Associated Press. I've seen some simplistic sort of previews of this game where the description of Michigan is steady. Is that an accurate way to describe the way Michigan is playing?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fair to say that. I mean, you look at the results, you look at the record, and they have been. And as I've said at least once, and yet who have they beaten? That's not their fault. But we just don't really know yet how good this team is. And maybe that's a function of college football coming off the pandemic. Maybe that's the case in a lot of conferences. I got 8 teams to cover here in the state, Michigan State football and basketball, and the 4 pro teams, so I frankly don't watch a lot outside of what I have to. You know, it almost makes you wonder, is this the Big 2 and the Little 8, like the Big 10 used to be with Michigan, and Ohio State? Obviously, Michigan State's going to have something to say about that, but Penn State isn't what we thought they were, and Iowa hasn't sustained its success. So, you know, it may come down, as it has for many years, to the Michigan-Ohio State game Thanksgiving weekend on that Saturday at the Big House. But, you know, we'll see. Saturday is going to tell us a lot about both teams, and they'll both not be, you know, out of the woods yet.
Larry, great time. Appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on. We're going to get you back on again. Great stuff. I really appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day. Bye.
You got it. Larry Lage talking out the Associated Press on the big game this weekend between Michigan and Michigan State. And it's, you know, again, we're getting into the point now where these games, this one in particular, because it's probably the best game of the weekend, but these games are really starting to come on the schedule now, where you got these two programs, you know, you can talk about being close, but it wouldn't really matter if they weren't close or not. I mean, they're in-state rivals, but if Michigan was playing an unbeaten Penn State or an unbeaten Maryland team, for crying out loud, in their division, this would still be a big game. It just happens to be within the state together. It's the Paul Bunyan Bowl or something like that. It's the Paul – it was called the – I'm trying to figure out what it was called, the Paul Bunyan game or the Paul Bunyan – I thought Paul Bunyan was from Fargo. Was that not? Didn't the woman from Fargo say, "Yep, home of Paul Bunyan, babe, the blue ox."
Yeah, I always thought that was a more Minnesota thing.
I thought so too.
Okay, but you know, maybe we're wrong. I don't know.
And remember when William Macy goes, "Babe, the blue ox," just like that was. I thought that was a Minnesota thing. Up in Brainerd, eh? Yeah, Brainerd, home of Paul Bunyan, babe, the blue ox. I didn't know there was a Michigan thing as well. But oh, this game is going to be big because the winner gets control of the division for right now. We'll see how it plays out. But I was kind of, you know, I want to pull so bad for Jim Harbaugh. I really do. But seven seasons, man, he can't beat Ohio State once. I mean, don't get me wrong. A lot of schools can't beat Ohio State over the last few years, especially when Urban was there. But now once, Did they get one win where the ball just bounced their way in Ann Arbor? You know, you got to beat your rival. He knows that better than anybody. He's a Michigan guy. He knows it. You know, it's not just a game. He gets it. But, you know, again, this will be – I mean, can you imagine if Michigan wins this game and goes into the Ohio State game at the end of November unbeaten? And Ohio State maybe unbeaten in the Big Ten with their one loss to Oregon? Now the pressure's really on. Right? It's Sports Map Radio on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's, please.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. By the way, I researched this during the break because, you know, something gets in your head and you're like, I got to look that up. There's no way. So I looked up the Paul Bunyan Trophy. It's given to the winner of the Michigan-Michigan State game. And these two teams have played since 1898. But the Paul Bunyan Trophy is a 4-foot wooden statue of the legendary lumberjack. And it was first presented in 1953 when Michigan State began competition in the Big Ten. So they've been playing for this 4-foot trophy since 1953. But then I went, remember we said, I thought Paul Bunyan, because of the movie Fargo, thanks Coen Brothers, I thought Paul Bunyan was a Minnesota thing. So I looked that up too. And apparently it's not necessarily true. The folklore lumberjack and Babe the Blue Ox have a number of various claimed birthplaces, including Bemidji, Minnesota, and Brainerd, as the movie Fargo let us believe. But Bangor, Maine is also on there, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and also a number of places in Michigan. So there you go. I'm telling you guys, nobody does the research that we do on this show.
Yeah. Right? Hey, who knew that by waking up this morning and listening to us, you'd get a little Paul Bunyan history?
You'd get some Paul Bunyan history. And all because it didn't sit right with me that Michigan and Michigan State were playing for the Paul Bunyan Trophy when the Coen brothers clearly told us that was a Brainerd, Minnesota thing.
I mean, Michigan State should be like fighting over the glove trophy or something.
Right?
Something like that. The big mitt.
That's right. And instead, Paul Bunyan. By the way, Fargo is another one of those movies I watch when I see it on. I just go, flip, 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 flip.
Yeah.
Oh, Fargo. There you go.
Just for the accents.
Just for the accents. And just for, I think when actors, really, really good actors play pathetic characters, I some of them are just brilliant, brilliant pieces of art. I think of Jack Lemmon in Glengarry Glen Ross, where he played Shelley the Machine Levine. where Jack Lemmon, one of the greatest actors in American history, had to play this sniveling real estate down on his luck salesman that was just a mess, and his daughter was in the hospital, and he had to steal the leads, and he was just so, you know, he had that one scene where he tears up Kevin Spacey, and then the other scene where he's just like begging, like he's frantically trying to save his life and save his job. And William H. Macy played the character in Fargo, Mr. Lundegaard, brilliantly. I mean, he was pathetic. Remember when he was trying to do the, like, he got the phone call and they were like, we need those serial numbers. And he's like, I sent them to you. I don't know what to tell you. And they're like, yeah, but I need them, like, because I got to call back the loans. Like, I'll send it over you today. He's like, well, if you could just give them to me. No, I can't. And then he goes, I'll do a lot count. And he goes out and does a lot count. And he's just trying to. And then when this father-in-law is like, I'm not a bank, Jerry. They were going to give him 10% of the finder's fee. He's like, I don't need 10%. I need the whole thing. He just played a brilliant character. But nevertheless, the Paul Bunyan Trophy, you could probably see that when they bring it out. I like these trophies. I like college athletics. These trophies are so cool. Some of them are great. You know what the problem is, though? When one team dominates a rivalry, they make comments like, yeah, we lost the trophy. We don't even know where it is. Like they just pretend like it doesn't matter because they've been holding on to it for like 10 years. But some of these are cool. And the Paul Bunyan Trophy between Michigan and Michigan State coming up. Good, the bad, and the dumb. And then we'll get to Mike Tomlin and his response as to whether or not he's going to go take the USC job. It's all coming up in hour number two next.